Welcome into the Draftster with your hosts, Zach Blackerby and Christian Page.
Welcome into the Draftster. I'm Zach Blackerby, and this is Christian Page.
Hello.
How you doing, bud?
I'm great.
Fantastic, fantastic. Yes, so we are having our first lottery show. We'll get to that in a little bit. We'll take a look at what the 2016 NFL draft would look like if it had a system similar to the NBA lottery that we saw a few days ago. But before we get into that, thank you for tuning in. We are proud to announce that we are now on Blog Talk Radio. We're looking forward to our partnership with them, and we expect it to grow. So that's exciting. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at DrafterPod. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheDrafter. And, of course, check out our website at TheDrafter.com. We've got prospect previews going up of kind of the top guys that we see heading into the college football season. Mainly our guys right now are in the SEC. We're going to slowly branch out. I think our only non-SEC guy right now is Christian McCaffrey, who went up early this morning. So, but yeah, be sure to check all that out. But just to take a look at some news and notes going on, and all these are kind of draft-related. They involve rookies. They involve guys that just got drafted. New York Giants rookie Eli Apple's mother, Annie Apple, has been hired by ESPN as a contributor for Sunday NFL Countdown. What do you think about that?
It's interesting.
It is.
And, you know, I guess it's just the crowd she drew during the draft week and how, I guess, contagious her attitude and her personality was during the draft week. And a lot of people kind of grabbed onto it. And sure enough, ESPN saw the opportunity to, you know, do something about it. And
right.
She's doing something that which we wish we could do.
Yeah, she kind of busted onto the scenes when she wouldn't let Eli Apple wear a big watch. It was a watch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And said, hey, you're a college dropout, and you don't have a job. You're unemployed. So, yeah, you can't be wearing that. And it kind of blew up. But Annie Apple tweeted, for you truthers, ESPN didn't hire me because I'm cute. I have a degree in TV production and English. So not only am I quasi-cute, I'm semi-smart. So there you go. Congrats to Annie Apple. I'm excited to see what she offers. I don't think ESPN would have made this move if they wouldn't have thought that she could contribute right away. So that'll be cool. I'm looking forward to see what she does. And, you know, ESPN's made a lot of cuts with some big names. And to get rid of them and to bring her on, I think that sets a big statement, especially since some of the people they let go was on that program, on Sunday NFL Countdown.
Yeah, and we're just seeing more and more the social media, like, owning a lot of TV and everything like that.
Yeah, that's
true. I think with her blowing up on social media with the Rolex watch situation with her son, I think that's kind of ESPN saw that opportunity. And maybe she'll get, like, her own maybe five-minute segment or something every Sunday night, and we'll it'll be interesting to see. I think that's really cool, though.
I think we'll be forced to follow it regardless.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay. I'm looking forward to it. The Jacksonville Jaguars announced that first-round pick Jalen Ramsey underwent surgery to repair the meniscus in his right knee on Tuesday and is expected to return by training camp. That's a big, big positive news for the Jaguars.
Yeah, it really is. And just seeing Twitter blow up, you know, in the matter of seconds when this happened, it just scares, I want to say, just Jaguars fans, but just NFL fans all across the board, just with the unlucky situation with Fowler last year.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if it was the first day in camp, but I think it was the first week.
Gosh, it was early.
It was early, and he tore his ACL. Hopefully he'll be back. And then with Ramsey, just, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of how all the knee surgeries go and everything, but it sounds like this is pretty manageable and shouldn't be as long as a recovery as we thought it would be.
Yeah, from my understanding, if you're going to have surgery on a part of your knee, it's the meniscus that you want. It's not the ACL or MCL, obviously.
Yeah.
But, I think the Jaguars got a big break here. And Ramsey's expected to be back in time to be a starter on the Jaguars defense. It continues to improve. They improved it all throughout the draft this year. It was really their offense last year that took a big step. And, they hope that the Jaguars' defense can kind of match pace with that offense. And if that's the case, they're going to be a really, really good team. You know, the AFC South became instantly interesting, I think, as soon as this draft ended a few weeks ago. But yeah, I jokingly tweeted this from our account that it's the curse of David Garrard. It seems like ever since the Jaguars got rid of him, everything just kind of went downhill, and I don't really understand to this day why they got rid of him. I was a big David Garrard fan, but regardless, he's not in the league anymore. But, yeah, Dante Fowler
he's
going
tried,
down.
Though.
Yes,
he's
he has.
He's tried to get back in.
He has. But, I mean, he was good for the Jaguars, you know. I just don't really understand it. But, yeah, Dante Fowler's going to come back. Their first rounder last year. You were really high on him.
Yeah. I liked him a lot and just his explosiveness off the edge. And I think he did a lot of things well and would fit great in what Gus Bradley wants to do with rushing the passer.
I really hope that he didn't lose any of that burst.
Well, and that's always the concern, especially of a knee injury of the ACL or something of that caliber.
Yeah.
Yeah, because his burst and explosiveness off the snap is the best. Yeah, it was the best in that draft class.
Right, right. Not a whole lot of new salary since the last episode that we recorded, but we did talk about Ezekiel Elliott's potential salary. Well, he has gotten paid now. He's picked up his contract. Elliott has a $24.9 million deal over the span of 4 years, $16.3 million signing bonus, and in 2016 that's going to be a cap hit of $4.5 million. And we talked about, is it worth drafting a running back that early? One, just for shelf life purposes. I mean, we hear it time and time again. It's like a unanimous voice of all draft Twitter, draft media, asking the question, is it worth it? I mean, there's no doubt Elliott was a very talented player at Ohio State, and he'll probably be very, very successful at Dallas. If I was a betting man, I would put money on it, you know? But is it worth it? Is it worth the amount, one, of the player that you could get in the first round that will probably have a longer career, just looking at odds, you know? But also, you're having to pay a guy $4.5 million, and that puts him as the ninth paid running back in the league next year. So just to put that in perspective, that puts him above C.J. Anderson, Shane Vereen, Mark Ingram, Matt Forte, Frank Gore, and here's the most interesting one, Todd Gurley. And those are some guys, sure, they're not the elite, but they're very serviceable backs. I mean, to get paid more than Matt Forte and Frank Gore, in my opinion, without playing an NFL snap,
yeah,
I think that's kind of interesting, but you have to do it now. You have to do it because you drafted him so early.
And that's what that was the whole situation between the new CBA thing, because we had quarterbacks making more than Super Bowl winning quarterbacks.
Right.
But drafting a running back or anybody at pick four, this money is almost a guarantee that you have to pay him that money.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter about position. But with Elliott, if you see him as this potential long-term running back that hasn't had much of an injury history and has been uber productive his whole career at Ohio State, and for a team that I think has a little room for error at running back, even though, you know, they lost to Marco Murray a couple years ago. But I mean, Darren McFadden was still a 1,000-yard rusher.
Sure.
Lance Dunbar can give him a little, and Alfred Morris has starting experience. So even if it didn't work out, yeah, you got to, you know, bite the bullet with taking him at four. But I think Dallas has that comfort that they can, hey, we can take this guy at number four because we still feel comfortable of what we have in the backfield if it didn't pan out.
Well, just to look at the argument from the other side, do you think having all that depth maybe unjustifies that you have to pay him that much?
Yeah, it kind of does. But that's something that they had to look into before they picked him.
Sure. I mean, they obviously put a lot of time into this. A lot more than us just talking about it and thinking right now, sure. But I just think it's something to think about, that when you draft a running back that early, you're going to have to pay him more than the vast majority of the league. And with this wave of young running backs coming in next year, your Leonard Fournette, your Dalvin Cooks, your Nick Chubbs, those guys are going to get drafted early, and they're going to get paid a lot. I mean, at least two of those guys I think are going to get drafted, Christian McCaffrey. I mean, I think we have at least two backs taken in the first round next year.
Oh, I think at least. We might have two in the top 10. I know that sounds crazy, but they're that talented.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and Todd Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott have proved that it is worth it from a production standpoint. Now, whether you think it's worth it for your salary cap or whatever, we'll see. Jared Goff, the first overall pick, has yet to sign a contract. They're projecting it to be around $28 million. over 4 years with a $5 million cap hit in 2016. And really, if you can get your starting quarterback and only pay him $5 million against your cap in a year, I mean, that's really a win.
Mm-hmm. Especially of how high they drafted him. I mean, number one.
Right.
So I don't, yeah, that's almost irrelevant, you know, the $5 million cap hit for selecting a quarterback, you know, for 4 or 5 years. I don't think that's an issue for Los Angeles, I should say.
Yeah, it's going to take a while to get used to that.
I got used to it, and then, I don't know.
Well, it was me that was messing it up.
Yeah.
You kept correcting
just once,
me.
Just once.
I think it was twice.
Oh.
It's okay.
Okay. I probably didn't catch it the second time then, or the first time.
In honor of the NBA draft lottery a few days ago, when we come back, we'll take a look at what the 2016 NFL draft would look like if the NFL draft had a lottery system. It'll be fun. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, this is Larson Hansen, former offensive lineman for Sacramento State, and thank you for listening to the Drafter.
That was Lars Hansen. He went undrafted, but he is now a Denver Bronco. Former offensive lineman out of Sacramento State was one of our first guests on the Drafter. We appreciate him, and we are cheering you on as you fight to make an NFL roster with the with the defending Super Bowl champ Denver Broncos. It hurts me to say it.
It's okay.
Good luck to Lars. So, Christian spent all afternoon looking at the odds and percentages and what the odds would be in the specific order based on last year's final standings in the NFL and how they would project percentage-wise into an NFL draft lottery similar to the NBA draft lottery. So here's the order, just real quick. Dallas at 1, Tennessee at 2, Cleveland at 3, Baltimore at 4, San Diego at 5, Miami at 6, San Fran at 7, the Giants at 8, Tampa Bay at 9, Jacksonville at 10, 11 would be the Chicago Bears, the New Orleans Saints at 12, the Philadelphia Eagles at 13, and the Oakland Raiders at 14. And we're just going to do the 14 picks for the lottery. But number one is Dallas. Christian, who do we think Dallas would take? It's draft night. We're taking away all the trades, and we're assuming that we know what we knew going into draft night. So that includes the Laramie Tunsil incident. It doesn't include things that happened since then. For example, the Jalen Ramsey injury. So, number one, Dallas. Who do they take?
Well, the Ezekiel Elliott pick, I think, was a perfect marriage for Dallas, and I think that was a home run pick for them. But we're not taking him at number one.
Right.
I think right here we take a lot of people's best player available. Joey Bosa,
sure,
the defensive end from Ohio State, who actually went third overall to San Diego.
First non-quarterback pick.
There you go. And I think this would make a lot of sense for Dallas. For a while, this was a popular mock draft pick. And just adding some explosiveness off the edge, bringing another pass rusher with the whole Greg Hardy situation. And Dallas needs more building blocks on that defensive line and the defense as a whole. Jalen Ramsey was also another consideration here too.
Sure.
Who was actually who we had Tennessee taking at 2.
Yep.
And this makes sense. He's from Nashville. There's that connection there. Tennessee still is in desperate need of playmakers in the secondary. Ramsey having that playmaking ability in the back end could add a lot to what Dick LeBeau will like to do in the secondary, having all that success for the Pittsburgh secondary.
Well, there was a lot of speculation that Tennessee would take their hometown guy when they were at number one before mm-hmm. they even traded back. So I think Tennessee sitting at 2, getting Jalen Ramsey, I think that's a great pick for him. At 3, we had Cleveland getting the 3rd pick in the NFL draft lottery. And who would we have them taking?
Well, I think this is an obvious quarterback pick here. And we decided to go with Carson Wentz, quarterback, North Dakota State. Obviously, he went number 2 to Philadelphia with the trade up with Cleveland to begin with. And so this kind of makes you think that Cleveland was in play for a quarterback here. I think this makes a lot of sense of what Hugh Jackson, Wolverine, likes to do. We've said his name, like, what, three weeks in a row now?
I really think that's the most talked about coach on this show.
Yeah, I think so. Though that's not even his name, but we're going with Wolverine. So Coach Wolverine gets a nice quarterback to work with, be able to make plays outside the pocket, can make every throw downfield. I think they made a smart pick with Coleman in the first round, getting that playmaking receiver on the outside. But I think having a quarterback first and then partnering up with some receivers down in the draft which they certainly did in the real draft. I think that would make a lot of sense for Cleveland with Wentz at number three.
All right, at four, the Baltimore Ravens would be on the clock, and we have them taking Ronnie Stanley.
Yes, makes a lot of sense here. You know, you just, I think, a plug and play day one starter, offensive tackle, either side of the ball or either side of the line. We've seen injuries with Baltimore's offensive line and maybe some future contract negotiations. And so Stanley would make a lot of sense in Baltimore. I think this Ozzie Newsome would like this pick. He did like this pick. So Baltimore takes Ronnie Stanley at number four.
At five, we would have San Diego picking. They fell a little bit in the lottery system. They picked defensive end. As we talked earlier, Joey Bosa in the real draft. Who do we have him taking here?
So we'll give him the other defensive end, DeForest Buckner out of Oregon. I think he has a little scheme versatility between a 3-4 end and a 4-3 end as well. I don't think he's necessarily the big-time pass rusher that a lot of people build him up to be.
Right.
But I think he can two-gap on that side. And I think you could put him inside and let him play some 3-4 tech defensive tackle too in a 4-3 scheme. And I think that versatility, I think, made Buckner's value higher than maybe what we saw on tape, not buying into he's this great pass rusher. But I think at number five with San Diego, like you said, selecting Bosa in the real draft, taking the maybe the second-best defensive end here with Buckner.
All right, in the 2016 NFL Draft Lottery, Miami moves up to the sixth overall pick. They have needs all over the place. What do we have them taking?
We'll give them a running back. You know, they lost Lamar Miller in the free agency period. I don't know if they're sold on Jay Ajayi yet. And then they took Kenyon Drake later. But I think having a potential all-pro caliber running back in day one, I think, would be great for Adam Gase's offense and work with Ryan Tannehill and a couple of the offensive weapons on there. And I think Elliott in Miami, I think that would be a great, great marriage for them.
All right, at seven, San Francisco. Who do they take?
Well, we'll take the next quarterback, Jared Goff. In this situation, he was the second picked quarterback behind Wentz, who went to Cleveland at three. I think with the California connection, this makes sense here. And it'd be interesting to see what Goff could do in the Chip Kelly offense. I think that was kind of there was a lot of intrigue there to see if San Francisco would take a quarterback.
Right.
And especially one of those top few guys. And we didn't necessarily get it, but I think Goff, Kelly, and that California connection, and with the whole Kaepernick thing, not knowing what's going on there, what's going to happen, I think Goff to San Francisco would be a pretty safe pick, I guess you could say.
All right, at eight, the Giants moving up a little bit in our 2016 NFL Draft Lottery. Who would the Giants take at number eight here?
We're going to have them take in Jack Conklin, the offensive tackle out of Michigan State. For a while, this was probably going to be the actual pick.
Yeah, they wanted Conklin. They liked what they saw in him.
And that's kind of how they slipped back to 10, and they ended up taking Eli Apple because the rumors were floating around. That's why Tennessee moved up to 8, because they wanted Conklin. And then Chicago goes to 9 to pick up Leonard Floyd, who was the next player the Giants wanted. And so the Giants settled 10 for Eli Apple. So I think at 8, they get their guy here, lock up that right side, and have two first-round tackles in back-to-back seasons, with Ereck Flowers being last year's pick.
And number 9, Tampa Bay gets the pick. Moving up just a hair, who do we have them taking?
I'll let you say it.
Vernon Hargraves, cornerback out of Florida. And, of course, they got him in the real draft as well. But I think anywhere around 9, 10, 11 was a great value for him. He's going to be a good corner in this league for a long time. He can apparently play nickel, even though he never really did that at Florida. He's projected to play nickel at Tampa Bay. They've got some good corners on the outside. So it kind of makes sense there just as far as scheme goes and personnel goes.
Yeah, just get him on the field.
Absolutely. And he's a guy that can make plays for you.
Mm-hmm.
Number 10 in the 2016 NFL Draft Lottery, the Jacksonville Jaguars. The big losers, really, as far as this the lottery system goes. Who do we have them taking?
Yeah, I text you. I said Jacksonville pretty much got screwed up by the Page lottery system.
That's right.
Number 10, Jacksonville, we'll get them taking Leonard Floyd, we'll go edge player from Georgia.
Yeah.
I think he could bring a lot of things to the skill with his skill set, being able to rush the passer, probably more as a outside linebacker than maybe a defensive end, but put him there on third down. I think you partner him up with Dante Fowler. I think that would be an awesome pair. Get those SEC guys in there, work him in with Gus Bradley's system, And I think for a while, I think he was actually on Jacksonville's radar, just listening to some reports for a while. But I think there's a lot of upside with Floyd going forward. And I think hoping Bradley's there for a long period of time, I think he could do some good things with Floyd.
The versatility talk on Floyd, did he ever stand up at Georgia?
He did at times. There was some people were saying that you could see him playing inside linebacker. I never saw it.
No, I didn't either.
I mean, unless that's something he did in high school or they practiced, I don't know. They see more stuff than we do. But
sure.
Yeah, and he's actually not bad at coverage and playing in the flats and everything. So,
okay.
I mean, he has some versatility there. I didn't see it as a top 10 pick as he went.
Right.
As he's going here. But
yeah,
I think
that's something that you and I just kind of – we didn't really agree with the mass media mm-hmm. there as far as Leonard Floyd's value. Not that he's not a first rounder, but probably not a top 10 pick.
Yeah. I mean, I think just people see the slim frame, the average production out of college, and they think Deion Jordan, and it's just like, let's not touch him.
Sure.
I saw that float, and everybody was like, get him out of your head. You know, this is a different player, but you know, that kind of sits in your head for a while.
All right, number 11, we have the Chicago Bears. And who do we have them taking, Christian?
We have them taking Laremy Tunsil, offensive tackle out of Ole Miss.
So they're the ones in this hypothetical lottery draft where they're the ones that take the risk.
Yeah, and okay. They'll take the most talked about player on draft night for multiple reasons.
Sure.
Not just the pictures, but other, you know, potentially taking money from coaches and all this other stuff. And I think just adding another piece to the Chicago offensive line, put Kyle Long back inside guard, and then put Laremy Tunsil on the outside. I think Chicago would be pretty grateful if they took him at 11. I kind of wish they did going forward.
Yeah.
But they ended up taking Leonard Floyd, who we just talked about instead.
Right.
I think Tunsil would have been a smart pick here at Chicago at 11.
Since my time of watching football, I can't recall a time where I've watched a Chicago Bears game and thought, wow, their offensive line's playing well. I really can't think of a time. I really can't.
Well, I can't either.
Right.
There you go. And it makes you wonder how more productive, I guess, Matt Forte could have been, and how him and Cutler and Alshon Jeffrey and,
gosh,
you know, the pieces, Martellus Bennett, the pieces they've had.
Well, it's like they needed an offensive lineman was their biggest need every draft, and they draft guys like Shea McClellan, you know? So I don't know. That just never really made sense to me, but hey, all right. Let's move on to the 12th pick in this 2016 NFL Draft Lottery. The New Orleans Saints select who, Christian?
We're going to give them Louisville defensive tackle Sheldon Rankins.
Oh, I love Sheldon Rankins.
Who they actually took in the real draft.
Sure.
I'll let you want to take this one?
Well, just a guy who really can do a lot of things well. He wins one-on-one matchups. And in the NFL, you're going to get a lot more of those. Despite New Orleans really not having a whole lot on either side of the ball. But Sheldon Rankins is a good starting point. If you're going to rebuild, you can rebuild a defense around Sheldon Rankins. I think he's a guy who could be a franchise player for you and a guy who can make a difference and an impact right off the bat.
Yeah, and I think the Saints needed so much help defensively. They still need more help defensively.
But it's a good starting point.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. And I think Mel Kiper actually had Rankins listed as a defensive end.
I don't know about that.
I don't either.
I think he's a perfect three technique.
I do, too. I mean, I think that's your number one three-tech tackle right there in the class.
Yeah.
And yeah, but the Saints just adding some bulk up there in the defensive front seven, pair him with Jordan and Haloi Kakaha, who had a decent start of the season last
year.
I think those are pretty good building blocks going forward for New Orleans.
Sure. At 13, the Philadelphia Eagles would now be on the clock, and they really kind of need a lot of stuff. I mean, Chip Kelly kind of decimated their roster. So who would we have them taking, Christian?
We're going to give them Houston cornerback William Jackson.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, they need some secondary help, as you alluded to. They had Eric Rowe last year, had an okay season, but I still think they need some more firepower, I guess, in the secondary there. And I think William Jackson could add that. He has that senior experience out of Houston, has great ball skills. You wanted him to get more physical at the line of scrimmage and win the balls in the air, but I think he has that ability. You can put him on an island. And I think Philadelphia needs that in that division.
He played off the ball a lot, though, right?
He did. And that's where the physicality concerns kind of come in. But if it's not his game, you know, don't force somebody in that situation.
Do you think you can give someone the island term if they can't bump and run?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about that right when you said that. No, I guess you can't. I was thinking, now that you're saying that.
I mean, I'm fine if you say otherwise. I was just curious what your thoughts were.
Yeah, because I've said it multiple times that I think Alexander is your lockdown island guy in this draft. I think Vernon Hargraves has that caliber, too.
Sure.
I know Zach's shaking his head. but because he can play, I think they can both play off and they can both play on the line.
Yeah.
So that makes sense with the island situation. But I think Jackson, if you slowly add that into his repertoire there, I think that can I think he can have that skill set to be a number one corner in Philadelphia if that was the case.
All right, and the last pick in this NFL draft lottery, hypothetical, of course, the Oakland Raiders would be at 14, and we have them taking a tackle, Christian.
Yeah, Taylor Decker, one of Zach's favorites from Ohio State, has that versatility to play left tackle and right tackle.
Yeah.
Great player in space, as you've always said. I think he had the most violent and active hands maybe in this class out of all offensive linemen. And I think Oakland adding another piece to that offense that seems to be ascending upward with Carr, Murray, Cooper, Clive Walford, the tight end. So I think Decker could serve as another piece for that offense going forward.
And I think schematically, I mean, of course, the talent's great in what he does skill-wise, but schematically, they throw so many quick screens to Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, just kind of pulling him out there on those smoke screens and being able to put him one-on-one on a corner or a safety and having someone else block the other defensive back on the side of the field. I think he has the quickness to get out there to put himself in between the ball carrier and the defender. I think that would have been a great fit. I think he'd be a great fit in a lot of places, but Taylor Decker was my number two tackle in this draft. Draft night, he might have moved ahead of Tunsil, to be 100% honest, just because of all the stuff that happened. I was really high on Decker. He was one of my guys. In the real draft, Detroit Lions, they were able to nab him, and I think they got a steal, to be honest.
I think so, too. Like you said, your number two tackle. It's the fourth one, I guess, off the board? Yeah.
Yes.
Been the fourth one, so no.
No, third.
Third.
Tunsil, Stanley. No, Conklin.
No, Conklin. Yeah,
so fourth. So, yeah, we just thought that would be a little bit of some fun stuff going on since the NBA draft lottery was last week. Let us know what you think. You can go to the contact page at thedraftster.com, fill that out, send us an email. We'll get back to you ASAP, as well as tweet us on Twitter at DraftsterPod. Be sure to follow us, subscribe, and we love interacting with you guys, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to The Draftster.
Thanks for listening to The Draftster. Be sure to subscribe, follow us on Twitter at DraftsterPod, and visit our website at DraftsterPod.com.